and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined as always by MTM's managing editor, Mark Osterman. Joe Chung is somewhere in the middle of the Pacific looking at whales on his way up to Alaska. He finally got on his Disney cruise, so it's good news that he isn't here this week, Mark. Instead, we have our good friend Han from Chicago, at Han Chicago on Twitter, joining us to talk about your epic trip like to the Middle East and Asia. Oh my God, I was so jealous about it, as everybody will soon learn.
I was exhausted by it.
Yeah, you did go a lot of places.
And then
you
ended up it's already starting. I knew it. Okay, yeah.
And then you ended up in Europe somehow. No, at the end,
It was like every day. It was like, I'm on this plane. I'm on this plane. I'm on this plane. I'm on this plane. I was like, geez.
Yeah, it was a lot. I admit it was a lot.
I'm interested to hear how you put it all together, though, for sure.
Well, before we get into the show, as a reminder for people out there listening, you can find everything related to this show at mtmpodcast.com. You can also subscribe in any podcast app. Just search Miles to Memories. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we really love 5-star reviews. They help us out a lot, but you can find everything mtmpodcast.com. So, Han, we've known each other for a few years. We've met in person now a number of times. And I just remember from the earliest kind of getting to know you on Twitter, I think that's maybe the first place that I came in contact with you. You would take these like crazy trips and where you would stay in really nice hotels and fly in really nice products and, you know, live that lifestyle of the rich and famous, all for pennies on the dollar with miles and points. And yeah, we're going to talk about one such trip. But what's been the motivation over the years getting in the miles and points to do these types of, like, you cram a lot into a few days, fly all these fancy stuff, but you don't, you know, spend weeks on the road either.
Yeah, no, I've always wanted to just extract a lot of value from the game. And, you know, I had been gambling for a very long time before I got into the points and miles game. And, you know, that's a negative EV game. So I kind of wanted to make up for that and kind of go extreme on the other side. And, you know, quite frankly,
that's how I used to justify losses too. Like, well, I didn't pay for flight or hotel. So, you know,
yeah, well, you say that to your wife enough times that it gets old.
So. Exactly.
Yeah. So I went to a different game. So, yeah. And, you know, I don't necessarily need to spend that much time in certain places, and I only have so much vacation time. So I just try to cram a lot of stuff in, and yeah, it can be exhausting, and I pay the price dearly after this trip, cause I was a basket case for like 10 days after I got back. The jet lag was the worst ever, but still I'll take it.
I used to do a lot of trips kind of similar to that, although not nearly as aggressive as you. You do hop around more than I used to, but as the years have gone on, to your point, like, the older you get, the jet lag just gets worse and worse. You recover a lot, you know, less fat. Like, I used to be able to push myself as hard as I wanted to. The next day I would wake up and be fine. And then, yeah, now it's just the harder I push, the longer it takes to recover. And jet lag is just miserable too. So I feel you on that.
Yeah, no, it wasn't fun, but the trip was fun. And I didn't sleep much on the trip either, just because the way I put it together. But you know, it is what it is. That's what I like to do.
Self-inflicting wounds right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to preview everything, it's a crazy itinerary. Like I said, you went through the Middle East, through Southeast Asia, ended up in Europe. You did the Maldives overwater bungalow. You flew in some first class cabins, showers in the sky, all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff. And I want to kind of go through the whole trip, and then we'll talk about redemptions, maybe some of your key takeaways, reviews, stuff like that. But here's a question I think a lot of people out there are going to be wondering, especially with you going to the Maldives and everything. How does your wife let you get away with traveling like this by yourself without you, you know, bringing her along? I know this is a question I get a lot when I leave and fly. But you take it to a whole nother level.
No, that's a legit question. I mean, for the Maldives trip in particular, she actually had her passport had expired, so it wasn't ready to go without. So that was part of it. And then also, she was very skeptical about paying all these fees for this little, like, you know, the plane that takes you over from the main airport to the seaplane. You know, she was like, well, why are we paying $420 for that? That seems ridiculous. And then she wasn't sure about the food. And then she just talked herself out of it And, you know, we were originally going to go together, but then I said, well, this Marriott thing's going to devalue. So I'm just going to go for it. $35K plus $50.
Got to use my certs. Got to use them.
let's do it right now while I can do it cheap. And it was off peak, you know, so there was some rain there while I was there. So it wasn't like ideal conditions, but, you know, still it was, like one of those things I kind of wanted to check off, see what the big deal was, because everyone's been like Maldives. Either you really hate it or you really love it, and people kind of deride it. But like, I wanted to see it for myself, see if it was, you know, something worth doing.
So how is it being in the most romantic place in the world by yourself? Do you think it's weirder by yourself or weirder with a guy friend?
No, it's depends. No, I was definitely weird because everyone would always say like, so is someone going to join you, sir? Or like if I was ordering food, they'd be like, is that for two? Or, you know, that kind of thing. So
are you calling me fat?
Yeah. Definitely they expect you to be there as a pair. And I don't think they are too judgmental about, you know, whether you're with a guy or a girl or whatever, but like they expect you to be paired up. And
like a romantic getaway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I only stayed for two nights in one of the resorts. I actually stayed three nights total, but in two different resorts. And, the guy, when I was leaving, was like, oh, gone so soon. So like, everything I did was kind of weird to them, and, you know, kind of getting compute.
I'm going to bust your balls a bit here. All right. Are these the mental hoops we jump through where we fly, 20 some hours and then pay for a seaplane transfer just to justify booking a $35K a night hotel before it goes up to $50K or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, okay. All right. So I went to one. So that's a Love Meridian where I paid the $420. And then I stayed at the Sheraton Full Moon Bay or something. I forgot what the other one was, with the Sheraton. But that one just was a boat ride. But that was a free boat ride. And that was just for one night. But yeah, there is some mental calculus like, oh, you know, like it just breaks down to like a $210 a night, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's not bad. When you throw in the free boat, it's not too bad.
It's okay. It's okay. But I'm sure there's other beach places that are like just as good or whatever, you know, that are much closer. But I don't know, like people had that mystique about the Maldives, and I really want to genuinely like look at it for myself instead of just having filtered it through like YouTube or whatever, the hate mongering that goes on against the Maldives, you know, case in point yourself, Mark. So
I'm the captain of the hate mongering. But no, it does look amazing. I always just found it interesting, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I don't think anybody really knew what the Maldives was. Or where they were, or anything like that. And then just through like social media and stuff, and it was always like a famous place or where famous people would go. And then, you know, I even see like non-Miles and Points people like talking about going there and stuff. And it's just crazy how much it's blown up for such a random in the middle of nowhere place, really.
Yeah, no, it is strange how popular it's become. I will say, though, like that airport there is terrible. Like it's one of the worst. Like you expect a luxurious airport and it's just like terrible. But otherwise, the experience was excellent. I wish they would invest in some new airport. But then again, I'm based out of O'Hare, so I can't really talk much.
Spoiler. Yeah, worst airport in America for sure. But spoiler alert, down the road in your trip, you go to the best airport in the world, right?
Singapore. Yes, I do. Yes. That airport's awesome.
Let's go back to how you got over the water, because I feel like there's that first leg of your trip, there's two really interesting things there. First off, I like the way you did it. You started off by flying Etihad Economy from, was it from Chicago to
Nothing says Maldives like economy over the
Yeah, I okay, so a little background on that. I did fly Etihad Economy, 40K AA miles from Chicago to the Maldives with a stopover or layover in Abu Dhabi. And, you know, that's pretty good redemption, even in economy, I think. And I had to do that.
That's really cheap. That's like New York to Chicago these days.
Yeah. So I had to do that because I changed my plans. Like when I started to see this award space for first class on Qatar, on both their 777, which they're leasing from Cathay. And then what I really wanted to fly was the A380 Qatar first class from Doha to Bangkok. When I saw that award space opening, I had to switch some stuff. And I pushed my Singapore Airlines business class to next year, Like I pushed it way far into next year. And then I had to book this, whatever I could get, which was this Etihad economy to the Maldives. And so then I could position. So I'm using the Maldives to position and that's kind of warped, but that's kind of what I was interested in. So that's what I did. And then while I was in Abu Dhabi, I bought a $150 entrance into the first class lounge and spent a couple hours there. And that was nice.
Was that the lounge with the $40,000 bed or whatever?
No.
I'm curious about that.
That's Swiss on the way back. So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So a lot of people in the hobby, I feel like they're always talking themselves into how they could never fly a really long haul economy. And I've flown, 12, 13 hours quite a few times in economy, and it's not fun, but you survive, you get to the other side. And I think part of travel is like the destination and the experience along the way. So I do love flying in premium cabins, but I feel like if you have to fly in economy or nothing, then that's the way to do it. Fly in economy. Was it as bad as you thought it was going to be? Have you done a lot of similar long haul economy flying?
Did you cry in the bathroom like Bethany?
She did that on a business class, or what I think.
Anyway. I know it was premium economy.
Oh, premium economy.
Yeah. Oh, my feet only go up a little bit.
No, I'll be honest. The A350, so A350-1000. That was the first route from Chicago to Abu Dhabi, and that's a brand new plane. That's like not even a couple of months old, and that was rough though, because the pitch was minimal, and the guy in front of me reclined all the way back, and he was in my face, so that was rough. But then the leg from Abu Dhabi to Maldives, that wasn't too bad. That was on their 787. That economy product was much better for me anyway. So I have flown economy to Korea and elsewhere, and it's okay. I think I learned this time, you pony up a little bit more for the aisle seat in that situation. And I can do that. That's totally fine. So you can avoid someone just not going by the unwritten rules of not reclining all the way back. So that's what but I endured it. It was fine. It was totally fine.
Endure is a good word for that type of flight, right? You can, after it passes like 5 or 6 hours, then you really are just enduring it. I mean, it's nicer to have all the bells and whistles, but it sucks to hear that the seats aren't as comfortable. I feel like that trend of cutting back the padding and all that's happening on these long international flights as well, and that sucks.
Yeah, if they just gave me a little more leg room, I would have been fine, but they need to maximize their dollars, so they squished a lot of people in there.
Was the first class lounge in Abu Dhabi, was that worth paying for?
I think so. I've been there before because I flew the apartments way back when, I don't know, pre-COVID times. But this time it was even nicer because I just really needed a break after that long haul. you just have a nice shower. There weren't that many people in there, and had a nice meal, and just got to relax, watch some TV or whatever. And then, just get myself psyched up to get in another economy flight, but it was all good.
Now it was mostly empty when you were in there, right? Like pretty sparse.
Yeah. Cause they don't have a lot of first class product anymore. Not as much as they used to, because they dropped all their A380s, at least for now. They might be bringing them back as rumors have been percolating here. But when I was flying, they weren't around. So you just have them on a couple of 787s, as far as I know. So yeah, there weren't a ton of people in there. And I don't think a lot of people want to pay $150 like me to go in there. But I just was like, just let me in there. I need an oasis.
All right. So you talked about the second sort of leg that you repositioned for, and that's flying, I think, up to Doha and then eventually to Southeast Asia. And I don't know. It's a little bit it's a little bit of a haze to me because you went back to the Maldives at some point.
Yeah.
But what was that award? How did you book that? And what exactly was the routing on it?
Okay. So the exact routing was Malé to Doha, Doha to Bangkok, Bangkok to Kuala Lumpur. And the way I did it was for the first leg alone, I did it with BA Avios. I should have done it with AA Miles, but I just didn't have enough after I had to burn some for that first economy long haul. And then the part from Doha to Bangkok to Kuala Lumpur, all that was on one award on AA, and that was $50,000 with some cash. Not too bad. I think it's actually the opportunity to get on the A380 on Qatar, it was just too huge to pass up because it's so hard to fly that usually, because it's only usually going to London and Paris these days. But then I guess they have this kind of leisure thing to Bangkok, and I jumped on it.
And you also flew on a Qatar-operated Cathay Pacific plane, right?
That's right. That was the part from Male to Doha. And again, I booked that with Biavios, and it was 52K Biavios with some cash. Unfortunately, there's a lot of surcharges out of Male. It doesn't matter what currency you're using, but that was like 200 plus for that.
Was that in first class?
Yeah, it was first class.
So that's their international first class on their 777, right?
Yep. And it's just like Qatar, or just like Cathay, but they have some nice Qatar flourishes inside, you know, some of that, I guess it's kind of maroon or something that they put in there. And the food, obviously, all the soft product is Qatar's. But I don't know. I really liked it. And I was the only one in there. So when you're the only passenger, they kind of dote on you. So that was fun.
I hate that part.
Do they have soy sauce? That's the question.
Yeah.
I just want to be left alone. Let me watch my Rambo movie, all right? Let me be here in peace.
No. They had all the bells and whistles, caviar, etc. It was great. But it's only a four-hour flight. And so when you do it with BA, obviously, it's not as bad. You know, usually BA, obviously, isn't a really good currency for long haul. But 4 hours, it's not too bad. And it wasn't that much different from what I would have gotten it at with AA. The only, you know, the thing that I messed up on was that I booked it in between two transfer bonuses, you know, from whether it was from Chase or Amex. So I goofed up, but I was just like, I need to book this now or I'm going to lose it. So, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Before we leave the Middle East, let's just talk about the Maldives again.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you regret, whether it's, you know, paying for the seaplane, the different hotels that you already talked about, which hotels you chose? Was it worth it as a single person to go visit there? Are you glad with all the Instagram craze and the craze in the miles and points? Are you glad that you did it? And would you recommend people out there do it themselves?
I would regret. No, I don't regret anything. I definitely am glad I went. I scratched an itch, and it's beautiful. It's really a stunning, beautiful place. Yes, the food is overpriced. And I'm still not quite sure what Maldivian cuisine is. I had some very spicy fish that seemed like an Indian dish, and they were saying, you know, they made it very mild for me, but it almost burned my mouth. But you know, so I don't know how great that was. But no, but I don't regret it because it was so gorgeous, and the overwater bungalow experience is really unique and fun. And I think you should try at least once. Now, am I going to go back again anytime soon? Probably not. So it's not like something that bears repeating, at least not for me. I mean, I might go back again if my P2 wants to go after I told her about it. But like, you know, I'm in no rush to go back. So it's kind of this mixed review.
A lot of places have overwater bungalows now. What about that experience? Do you think that that's something people should seek out? Was it unique enough, whether it's in the Maldives or somewhere else, that you think people should go for an overwater bungalow?
Yeah, I think you should try it at least once. I really do. I think it's just really fun to just sit on the deck and see the water there. And it's so peaceful. And I don't know, you just see a certain kind of blues that you haven't seen before, at least not me anyway. You know, you guys are more, well, Sean, you're definitely more better traveled than I am, more widely traveled than I am. So, but I mean, I really enjoyed it. And there's a lot of little wildlife like crabs and lizards and whatever. And that's all cool too. But I mean, and you can do snorkel if you're into that. And, you know, and I did, I almost felt like if I hadn't gotten out of the water when I did, I might've died because there was like a huge, thunderstorm after that. but it was fun. I think you should try it. Now, like, again, don't do it because of just the hype, but do it because you really want to check it out. And you'll see for yourself, because you know, it might actually be something that you want to do on a regular basis. But like, I had to find out for myself. I didn't want to just go by the videos. I didn't want to just go by the hearsay.
From the overwater bungalows of the Maldives to the malls of Southeast Asia. So again, that was the next thing that like took me back, because not enough people talk about the mall culture in Southeast Asia and how cool it is. And I know you got to Malaysia, I think, which has, I mean, Malaysia has so many good malls. I know it's crazy, Mark. And all the malls have really good food too. So, you know, that's something to do. But I appreciated that. I mean, you've obviously been to Southeast Asia quite a bit, but yeah, I don't know. What are your takeaways? Like, for me, like, the first time I was ever there, we just always felt like drawn into the malls. You can find everything there, you know, air conditioning too, which is nice. You can eat a meal, just people watching. If you're traveling long term, sometimes you want to go see the cinema, see how it's different, things like that. So, yeah, I know this is completely random as we transition to Southeast Asia, but let's talk mall culture for a second.
Yeah, no, mall culture is intense, and they take it to another level in Asia, Southeast Asia, especially, you know, like whether it's Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, Bangkok, what have you. They put all our malls to shame. I mean, I don't even think we have much of a mall culture in the United States anymore. In any case, you know, people just buy everything online. But mall culture over there is very special because of the AC. I think people just like to go there and socialize and have a nice place to not sweat to death.
There's nothing better than walking into like one of those nice malls in Bangkok on a particularly steamy day. Or Kuala
Lumpur. Your shirt's already drenched.
Yeah, but it feels so good, Mark. That air conditioner, they blast it. It feels so good.
I gotta stay in this mall until my boob sweat dries up, and then I'll go back outside.
That's exactly it. So yeah, they're and just like some of these malls are like 8-9 stories high with these intricate escalator designs, and they're just destinations unto themselves. And then, you know, a city could have like Kuala Lumpur or Bangkok could have dozens and dozens of them. It's not like, you know, there's only one mall. Like, to your point, here in the US, it seems like these days there are some like destination malls, like American Dream tried to open up outside New York City like that, but there's not very many of them. You just have like these dying off malls and then these super high end ones. And a lot of our malls are outdoors too. So it feels completely different. And as a side note, I feel like going to malls, not whether it's just in Southeast Asia or anywhere else, it's a good way to like see the culture because every place does it differently. And, you know, it's always an interesting place to go. I know it's so nerdy, but yeah, I'm big on malls. See, there's always Mark's done this show with me for years, and he always learns something new about how nerdy I can get.
It's like how Sean goes walks around Walmarts when he travels too.
I don't go to Walmarts anymore. Okay, I enough reselling, and that took all the love of Walmart out of the equation for me. So, but yeah, I didn't walk around them, but I would go like Source or whatever. Even in like Hawaii, I would go look at the clearance section to see what they had. But now I would like look at the different layouts, and yeah, it was crazy.
I remember the write-up when you were in China and they were selling fish and all kinds of interesting stuff.
Yeah, that was fun. Yes, you're right. I did randomly go to the Walmart in China, but that's a little bit of a different story. Who doesn't want to see what Walmart looks like in China? I've also seen Sam's Club in China.
So. Me, I know.
Well, that's why we're different people. All right.
No, I mean, yeah, besides the malls, though, I mean, you really should check. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you did this, Sean, where, you know, you went to the hawker stalls and out kind of out street food culture. That's really what I like about Southeast Asia. And it's so cheap. You know, like I stay at the Mandarin Oriental over there on a Amex FHR deal, $150, you know, with $100 credit and free breakfast or whatever. I mean, it's basically break even. On that kind of thing. So the opportunity to stay in very luxurious places is probably Southeast Asia in particular is probably the best bet. And especially with Asian service culture, which is just at another level. I don't think any area really tops it, puts everything here to shame as far as I'm concerned about like with people like serving you and addressing you properly. It's great. It's just like a fantastic experience. And you don't even need it that much to enjoy it.
I remember on Twitter you were posting that you were nervous about the monkeys. So how did that end up? I don't know if I ever saw you say how that went.
Yeah, no, I was nervous about the monkeys when I went to Kuala Lumpur. I was going to,
Batu Caves.
The Batu Caves, the Hindu shrine over there. Yeah, there were a lot of monkeys there, but I did not want them to touch me, so I was very careful to see.
They're crazy, like, because people bring stuff to them. Like, people brought, when I was there, this is back in 07, but people brought, like, this big jug of juice, like, almost like a half a gallon of juice, and the monkey sat there, flipped it up in the air, and just chugged it out of the thing, and hold up, like, apples, and they would just come and grab them, like, that's what they do. So, yeah, you definitely don't bring food if you don't want contact with those monkeys.
I'm just envisioning, like, the A Night at the Museum where that one monkey jumps around and steals the keys and stuff. That's what, they're training
to pick pockets.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like.
I mean, it's intense. There's a lot of monkeys there. There were a lot of wild chickens, or I don't know what maybe they're raising them, but there's chickens there. There are pigeons there. You know, one guy I know joked around with me. It's like, this is a, you know, ground zero for every kind of virus, cross species contamination. I was just like, I suppose so. I wasn't trying to think of it that way, but so yeah, I mean, it might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I enjoyed it. You know, I climbed those steps up to the Batu caves, and it was stunning. You know, it was really a gorgeous thing. But I went really early in the morning because I wanted to beat the heat and beat the crowds. And you can just ride like a local train out there from the center of the city, Kuala Lumpur, to the Batu caves, and it's kind of wild. So yeah, that was another kind of bucket list thing. And then the other one, obviously, being Petronas Towers. I've always wanted to go up those, and that's my thing, Sean. You know, you have the malls, you have the amusement parks, but I always go up tall buildings wherever I'm going, because it's just after I missed out on the World Trade Center. You know, I lived in New York and I never went up them, and then they were gone. You just never know when something might not be around. And so I always go up high buildings wherever I go.
It's funny because I'm often in places with tall buildings, and I've been on many of the tallest ones, but I have friends who, you know, have it like the bucket list to go on the 10 tallest buildings in the world. And I've just never been that drawn to do it. Like, I always look at like, oh, it's $40 to go up there. That's a ripoff. But then, you know, I spend crazy money going on roller coasters and stuff. But I have been on a lot of the tallest buildings in the world just because I've been those places. And, you know, like in Shanghai and elsewhere. And I do enjoy it, but just not enough to go on like every single one. You know, you gotta pick and choose your battles. But I totally get it, because these buildings are unique. Every observation experience is unique. So it's not like, you know, the old days, you take an elevator up. A lot of times there's presentations that go with this. There's other things. So as they're building these bigger and bigger buildings, they're making the experience of visiting them, you know, more like a destination or like an attraction.
Yeah, for sure. Petronas Towers, they do a great job leading people in and out of there. And it's very well curated. I don't know what the right word is, but you know,
is it still free to get in there? Like,
no, not free. You gotta pay. But it wasn't too bad from what I can remember off the top of my head. But yeah, it was really well done. And but you had to, I had to book it a day in advance. And luckily I had 2 days there, or I would have missed out, because I guess the slots fill up real quick.
My favorite memory of Kuala Lumpur, maybe not my favorite, but we were standing out in front of the corner of the Petronas Towers, trying to get, you know, those famous pictures with the tower behind you, standing in that spot that's kind of on the corner. And this guy is standing right next to us holding this $5,000, it looked like a really expensive SLR camera. And all of a sudden we see this guy like running from about 500 feet away. He gets up to full speed, grabs the guy's camera at full speed and just keeps going. And by the time the guy even realized the camera was gone, like the guy was already out of sight. And yeah, you're like, welcome to Malaysia. It's the only crime I've witnessed there. But let's talk about your hotels. So you did fine hotels and resorts in both, like you said, the Mandarin Oriental, right, in Kuala Lumpur, and then the Conrad in Singapore?
That's right, the Conrad. I just, because I kind of like those teddy bears and ducks, but
yeah, you got a whole creepy closet full.
What's with some of the properties not having them? Like in New York City, I had to beg the Conrad for a bear, and they didn't have any ducks. In Vegas,
they don't have anything.
They don't have, so
no, I'm thinking, yeah, Vegas.
What's going on with that?
Unless you have a suite. Yeah. I don't know what's up. I mean, Conrad, you got to have a suite in Vegas to get a duck. And I don't know about the bear, but no, but the one in Singapore was great. It's kind of boring design. It's definitely kind of more for a business crowd. And they used to, I think, I don't know, was it you that said this to me, Sean, that they used to cater a lot to the Chinese audience, but they've lost that obviously because of the pandemic. So it was kind of empty when I was there. But Singapore generally seems sleepier than before. But I don't think the tourism has ramped up quite yet. Although it's one of the easier places to get to as far as whatever this phase of the pandemic is. And yeah, I mean, I think people should visit Singapore. But I don't personally find Singapore to be a destination in and of itself, especially if you've been there. I think it's kind of a nice layover city and then go somewhere else. But I enjoyed both my stays, and the FHR stuff is great because you could stay till 4 and then, you know, then head to the airport, you know, without having to stress out about where to keep your stuff.
I think Singapore is like this great family destination these days. But the problem if you're from the U.S. is, right, I mean, to bring your family all the way there is such an endeavor. And and then you're not going to just want to go to Singapore. But I think like with all the gardens they built, the zoo, Universal Studios, Sentosa, just everything they built since the first time I was there in 2007 when they were just starting to get that stuff, just a few things. It's really been incredible to see the transition, but it's still, I think, a lot of like family stuff and things along those lines. Of course, they do have Marina Bay Sands and Resorts World Sentosa, which do have casinos, so you can do that as well. But even those properties have a lot for families. Like, there's just a lot of, you know, family stuff all around town. But yeah, let's dive into the Hawker Centers, because you mentioned them earlier. I talked about how like cool the air conditioning is in a mall in Southeast Asia. I think almost as refreshing is like raw sugarcane juice at a Hawker Center in Singapore. You don't even need the air conditioning. you just drink that, and it like instantly refreshing. They grind up the sugarcane. Oh my God, so good. But what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite Hawker Center in Singapore? Have you been there enough to have a favorite location? And then what's your favorite Hawker Center food when you visit there?
I don't have one I can identify. There is this one place that I went to, and I've gone to there a couple times now. This, I don't even know if it's part of a major Hawker Center, but it has like a one Michelin star, and they do these amazing noodles. I will try to get you the details after this, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah. I mean, it's just like the food can be so incredible for so cheap. And I kind of wonder how sustainable that is for Hawker Centers. I mean, I think they should probably charge a lot more than they do. It's kind of crazy. And then I've been hearing a lot about like how the older generation is going to retire or whatever, and there's no one to take over. So I do sometimes wonder about Hawker Center culture disappearing. And, you know, you should do everything you can to support that, because it's really amazing. And there's nothing really like that here in the States, except I guess maybe at Resorts World.
No, don't even start.
You triggered Mark. But, I mean, for people out there who don't know what a Hawker Center is, think of it like a food court on steroids. Like, they can have upwards of 50, 100 different stalls, and each stall usually specializes in one dish, but maybe a couple dishes around the same theme. And yeah, like to your point, like the prices are always very cheap. They're all around Singapore. There's a ton of them in Kuala Lumpur and throughout Malaysia as well. And the food is just incredible. I don't know that I've ever had anything bad at any of them, whether it's like clay pot rice or the famous Singapore, you know, chicken rice, or, you know, in Malaysia, they have some just amazing dishes. So I always recommend that. I mean, I think the thing that most Westerners go for is like the satay, which I can never say right, so I probably said it wrong, but or satay or whatever it is. But that's good, but like to me, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. I mean, that's, yeah, there's just amazing stuff there.
Yeah, I like the nasi lemak myself, you know, which is kind of a breakfast thing that they do with the rice and the kind of anchovies and other things that kind of mix in. It's really good. Just to tell you, the thing I was thinking about was Hill Street Tai Hua pork noodles. I'm not probably pronouncing that right either, but that place is amazing and has some of the best food I've had anywhere in the world for at any price point. So, you know, Singapore, just you got to go at least once. And like you said, Sean, there's like a ton of stuff to do if you're just there for the first time. A lot of just things to walk around and enjoy. And even just Changi, you know, just go to the Jewel and watch that waterfall coming out of the ceiling. That's amazing. So, I mean, Mark probably thinks that's dumb, but I don't know, like, why would you want to spend time in an airport? But
I know a lot of people go there that aren't even flying and just hang out, which, whatever, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, there's a high-end mall in there, too, and the locals are allowed to go, you know, they're allowed with their ID to go with shop. So they've sort of made it a destination, too. And yeah, it's an incredible airport. I haven't been there since the new, I was there just like a month before, I think, in 2019, before the new Jewel opened and all that. So I haven't seen that. I love that airport, though, and I'm looking forward to going back there.
I can't remember. Is that the airport that somebody was booking for like a year and a half? They'd book flights and cancel just so they could go hang out or something and take advantage of food and lounge access?
I think so, because I think they went to jail or something, and it was because the Singapore government doesn't. That's the one thing you learn about is you don't mess with the Singapore government, Singaporean government. No. Whatever they say, you know, it's not necessarily a free society there. People tend to have a good quality of life, it seems like, but, you know, it is totalitarian, I guess, for lack of a better word, in a lot of ways. So, yeah, the rules are to be followed, and if you don't, there's heavy fines and, I don't know, caning. They still have caning there, I think, for certain things, which is crazy.
Yeah. No, I wish the U.S. would invest in the infrastructure like they do in Asia as far as airport stuff goes. And if, you know, imagine if people would actually want to spend time in an airport how that might change the whole experience. But like, obviously that's not where we're at right now. And I don't know when we'll ever be, but it's a different thing in Asia. That's why I keep going to Asia, because it's just, it's so different than here. And then also being Asian myself, I feel like I don't have to explain myself as much there, or I don't have to explain myself in the same way that I sometimes have to do here. So it's
like that your name's not Joe.
Liberating. Yeah. That I haven't met the Asian quota for your show, but anyway,
so. Well, yeah, on that note, let's move along. No, I think Singapore really, I always say that Singapore reminds me of Disneyland, and people like give me a weird look. Mm. And it's because like all of the landscaping is perfectly manicured, and there's these incredible over the top attractions everywhere. And yeah, like you said, the first time you go there, there's a lot more to sort of uncover than on repeat visits, but it's certainly one of my favorite places. If it was just 10 to 15 degrees cooler, I'd probably go there a whole lot more often, because that's the one thing I always forget. And then I land, and then I get outside the airport, and it's just so steamy, and you're like, oh my God. But yeah, it's an incredible city, and one I recommend wholeheartedly, having been there quite a few times. And I recommend bringing your kids there if you are family. It's a perfect family travel destination if you can get over the fact that it's halfway around the world.
Yeah, no, I think when you get there, you could spend a lot of time there, and it's just a great jumping off point for a bunch of other places nearby. So it's like, if you use that as your home base in Asia or whatever, I think you couldn't, you know, do better than that, really. And then with Singapore Airlines being such a stellar airline, you know, that's another excuse to travel through there. Yeah, I can't speak more highly enough about that place.
And they say it's like a really good introduction to Asia if you're sort of like intimidated mm-hmm. by it. Absolutely is. It's the first place in Asia I ever visited. We were traveling, you know, backpacking around Australia, and then that was the first place in Southeast Asia that we went to, and everything's in English. It's really hard to find people who don't speak English there as their second language, because it's sort of a language that binds, you know, the Chinese with the, you know, there's people of Indian descent, there's a Malaysian mm-hmm. descent, there's people basically from everywhere there, even you know, leftover British and stuff like that. So it sort of binds everybody together, and it's a very easy place to travel, but also there's a lot of exotic different things about it. So it's a great sort of introduction into Asia. You know, it's definitely not the only place I would visit in Southeast Asia, but yeah, it's a good place.
No, I agree with you. And just one more thing about the Maldives, when you're talking about how accessible it is. Maldives is very accessible to the United States in terms of, I mean, they even use our currency. They don't even, I don't know what the Maldivian local currency is, but everything's just dollars. So you don't even have to change money there. And quite frankly, I mean, you don't even have to be vaccinated to go to the Maldives. In Singapore, you would run into more roadblocks there. So I do want to say, like, being vaccinated has helped me to travel. So like, I think it's really hard to not travel these days without being vaccinated, like what I was doing. But Maldives is one of the exceptions. Like you could fly in and out of there without, you know, being vaccinated, if that's your choice. So, you know, I want to say, like, this kind of trip, I it was hard before the pandemic, but it's much harder now. Sometimes you have to download these apps and fill out all these forms. And I would say that was probably the most stressful part of this trip. And I do think people should think about that if they're going to try to do something like this.
I think that's like the biggest deterrent to hopping around a lot. You know, if you go to Europe or whatever, it's easy because you can hop between places without a problem.
Yeah. But
when you're going to different countries in, you know, Asia or elsewhere, South America, stuff like that, like you're going to run into issues where each country is going to treat it differently, and you have to research all that. And I know a lot of people just don't want to mess with it, or worried about what happens if I didn't do this in time, or, you know, all that stuff. So kudos for you for doing it. It's definitely something I'm too lazy probably to to make that many hops just because of that. Like, the barrier of entry is high.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's so much different than it was before. So much of the world you could have just showed up without having to do anything. And yeah, it's a good reminder.
Yeah. So then, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about the route back or the way back from there, but yeah. So I was able to get Swiss business class for 99K United miles from Singapore via Zurich to Chicago. So that was the way to end the trip. You know, so for the first part, I got in the throne seat and you know what they call the throne seat in business class, and that was pretty nice. Except I was surrounded by a bunch of very rowdy children. So that wasn't ideal. And they didn't make the experience that pleasant. And then when I landed in Zurich, I decided to try to upgrade to first class. And you can't really book first class Swiss except by upgrading, or unless you find it like a cheap fare somehow. I paid a lot of money for that, but it was worth it because that bed, Sean, Mark, that bed is amazing.
So that's
40K bed. That's an amazing bed.
So they just have like a bed in there. How many beds do they have that you can use in their lounge?
There's two. I think there's two in the first class lounge, two bedrooms. And I was like the first one in there to use it that day because I flew in so early from Singapore.
Did you reserve it ahead of time, or do you have to reserve once you get there?
No, because I wasn't sure they would even let me upgrade. So once they accepted my upgrade, I just like ran up there and hoped for the best. And they said, yeah, well, it's open. You know, you can take it. And I stayed in there like 3 hours. And at first I thought, oh, this is just a regular bed. But then you go in and it's like heaven. I don't even know what to explain. It's like an incredible bed. It's called a Hastings bed. I'm not pronouncing it.
Yeah, they actually have a store because I looked it up after seeing that. And they have a store a couple miles from my house. But the starting price point was like 25K or something like that for the beds.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy in my book.
Yeah, I think Bethany said she's looking into it. So.
I mean, it does look like an amazing bed looking it up.
You should apologize to Steve once she makes that purchase.
But she's going to be so much better rested than all of us. So that's going to be
worth it. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, as you know, people in miles and points and, you know, we're always looking for a deal and stuff. When you come across a product that's a premium product at a premium price, but then you can like notice the difference, you know, it always mm-hmm. like makes you think a little bit. But then you remember, then you look at the price tag again, you're like, you know, I can get probably 90% of that bed for, you know, 10% of the price or something, but it looks amazing.
That's probably true. No, it's probably true. I don't know if I'll do that, you know, splurge again for that, you know, and again, it was north of 1K. I'll tell you that much. I might write about it, so I'm not going to go into the details at this point, but it was a lot. But, you know, you can use other things to offset that, as you know, like Capital One or whatever. It was still worth it. You know, it was still worth it for the one time. And since you can't really easily book it with miles, that's another thing, you know, like.
So was the bed more of the selling than the actual flight?
No, the flight is amazing, too. Like, it's the, you know, like people go crazy over the Lufthansa first, but I don't really like that product because it's so open and there's no privacy there. But Swiss is much more private. You know, you get your own, they got a door and everything. And I really like that. So I think it was worth it. And the food was great, both in the lounge and in the air. And the service was good too. And I think I was on an A340, and I don't think I've ever been on one. That's kind of a unusual four engine plane that I've never been in. So as an AV geek, that was another plus for the experience. So yeah.
My memories of the A340, I've only flown, I think, on a Cathay Pacific one, and it has those four engines, but that plane struggled to get off the ground. Like, it seems so underpowered, and so they're cranking the engines to full, and like, it's just, the plane just seemed way too heavy and, you know, and going up, but, on Cathay, the business class product that I flew was not very good. It was very, like, because it's a very narrow product, I'm glad, it's always cool to get to fly those products, especially as they're going away, you know, because that's really a plane from another time. But
exactly.
But it's neat. So, but the product on board, top notch, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely top notch. These little suites that you get, I probably as good as, I'm maybe not quite as good as the ANA New First, but really, really solid and much preferred for me over Lufthansa First. Although people love that first class terminal in Germany. So I, you know, whatever, you have to make your choices. Although I guess you could fly some way, you know, so you could have both if you wanted, but that's some weird routing stuff.
Weird routing. You never do that.
Yeah.
So you've been on a lot of the sort of more sought after products, right? I mean, I know that you're Lucky from 1 Mile at a Time is somebody who you look up to a lot. He's done a lot of the products.
Yep.
And I mean, do you have like a quick list off the top of your head, like maybe top three or five first class products that you've flown?
Yeah, top three, just off the top of my head, probably Emirates first on the A380, although I've also been on the 777 Game Changer, but I like my experience in the A3 better because of the shower. That is a really special thing. Probably ANA first, the new one, although I like the old one too. just the service is so great. I still haven't tried gel, but I'm hopefully remedying that next year. Another one, I don't know. I'll just say Swiss for now. You know, you could ask me tomorrow, it'll probably be a different list, but those jump at the top of my head. Like I got into the game because I really wanted to try those products, really. And I've been going down Lucky's list, and I'm hoping still to try to complete that list sometime. But, you know, that's just an arbitrary thing for me. You know, everyone has their own reasons for getting into the game, and it's just been fun. And fortunately for me, my P2 permits me to do this. So,
you know, it's an amazing part of this hobby and stuff. It just popped up on my Facebook memories. 9 years ago was my very first Cathay Pacific first class flight, which was my very first ever international first class flight, and I booked that with 1 day notice, and just the excitement of that trip and getting to experience first class. And I will say, like, I don't do it all that often anymore, although, you know, I had probably flown first class at least once a year all the way through 2019, including, you know, a few times in 2019, but like, it never got old for me. As much travel as I did, and a lot of things in travel have become mundane, or they became mundane. Even flying business class to me is not something that I look forward to nearly in the way that I used to. But for some reason, international first class is always something that gets me excited. It's special. It's about the experience. It's about eating caviar and, you know, drinking nice champagne. It's about the lounges. It's about the seats and just that whole experience. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. I'm totally agree with, I mean, I know people get like, people try to sell it on YouTube with all this like fancy, like people wear little suits or whatever and have put on accents and whatever, have that whole thing with the champagne glass toasting to the camera.
Crazy.
Like I get tired of that whole shtick. It doesn't have to be like that, but it's a really nice experience. It's really fun. You can make it fun as you want. And sometimes a crew, you know, they're not all stuffy people. Like they'll cater to how you are most of the time. So, you know, I'm trying to demystify, because it's not this like hoity toity thing necessarily. It can be that if that's what you want, but like, it could just be pretty down to earth and fun. And it is special, Sean. Yeah. I mean, we're really lucky to be able to do this. And I don't pretend that I'm not privileged to be able to do this with Points and Miles. So, I really appreciate it. And I know Mark doesn't give a, you know, whatever about it.
I just want to get from point A to B and be able to sleep. So I don't really. Yeah. All the
whatever. You're going to be flying. You're going to be flying to Hawaii on Life Flat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally the same class as international first class for sure.
Whatever. You're flying overseas on a Life Flat. It's awesome.
No, so. it'll be nice. I just like it. I'm fine with business class. I just want something that I can comfortably relax and, you know, hit the ground running. That's my main goal. And I know people always argue what's better to do it on the way over or the way back. And I always say way over, so that, you know, you're doing the overnight flight and you wake up and you're ready to go versus being all drowsy and that type of thing. I'd rather take the daytime flight back in economy or whatever and not have to mess with it. But yeah, I mean, the service and all that stuff, it's lost on me. I'm not a foodie. I don't care about any of that stuff. So just bring me some food, let me watch some TV, and let me sleep. And put some air conditioners in the first class products. It sucks.
Yes, I will say, yes, air nozzles should be universal. But that's one thing that's missing in Asia.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, once in a while you'll get lucky and they'll keep the plane at a normal temperature. But usually the plane is at a high temperature. So now you're hot. There's no air blowing on you at all.
No. Do you feel this right now? I don't need a blanket.
Yeah, you want to wear it's not good. Yeah, I agree with you. Like the way on YouTube and on social media, how the first class sort of lifestyles being sold, it's not going to change your life, right? And I think Mark makes a great point, and I think the way you flew out there makes a great point. It's about the journey, it's about the destination, it's about the travel itself. And, you know, I think it's great to fly international first class. I also don't think that it makes me any better than anybody else. It doesn't, change my life.
Put some coke in that Johnny Walker Blue for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I've done it. Absolutely guilty, Diet Coke, but yeah, absolutely guilty of it. You know, it's just about the fun of it, right? It's about, oh my God, I found something I love, and I get to experience this thing that not a lot of people get to experience, and that's a blessing instead of, oh, I'm fancy because I drank, you know, $400 bottle of champagne or something. I didn't feel any fancier after drinking Dom.
Which doesn't even taste good.
That's enough demystifying for now, okay?
Come on now.
So last question, Han, as we close out, any, you know, big takeaways from this trip? Obviously, you talked about the COVID stuff, how it's more difficult. I've traveled a lot this year, run into that myself, and that can definitely be a buzzkill. It can be something that deters you. But, you know, other than that, what other takeaways you have from this sort of, I'm going to call it an epic trip, because it was an epic trip, and I enjoyed following along on Twitter every step of the way.
I appreciate that. I appreciate, especially from you, you know, who's way more traveled, well-traveled than I am. But I would just say, you know, you got to take certain opportunities when they come. So like when those that award space popped up for Qatar in first class, and it wasn't necessarily from the United States, but like I wanted to position and get it done, because I was, you know, it's like you got to jump on that stuff, because quite frankly, some of those products aren't going to be around in a couple of years. You know, that's just not, doesn't make economic sense for Qatar to keep running the A380. Maybe only Emirates will be doing that longer term, to be honest. So jump on that kind of stuff when you can. And then more practically, just take some chances and check out Asia. You know, like there's some really, it's great to be in Asia right now because it's not as crowded. And if you are willing to take that risk, you should go over there. Like last January, I went to Bangkok, and that was when they were still doing the one night quarantine thing. But I got to go to some of the major sites there, and I was like one of the few, like, I don't know, 10, 20 people there. And that's never going to be like that again. So I would say, you know, take this opportunity of when it's transitioning from high COVID to whatever this is, low COVID. I don't know what to call it, but and take a chance and go overseas and explore. And if you could do it in Asia, I think it's great. And you're going to enjoy service culture there that's unlike here. And yeah, maybe you'll be a little bit uncomfortable, but I think you'll grow from it. So I you know, that's my takeaway. I'm planning to do it next year. Like I told you, I pushed back my Singapore flight for next year, so I already got a tentative trip planned. So
I'm excited. I'll hopefully the crowds stay away till early next year. I'll be there sometime February, March, into Southeast Asia and also the Middle East. So I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, I've, you know, been to that area of the world so many times, and I don't say that to brag. I say that because it's just I've been blessed enough to go to that area of the world many times. Let's put it that way. It's, you know, it's the food, the culture. Sometimes, you know, it's overwhelming. I obviously miss going to like China, and that's another big part of it for me. But Southeast Asia is amazing. And I'm glad that, you know, you talk about whatever era of the pandemic we're in, but it seems like at least we're in an era where maybe, you know, by the end of this year, like the hope that almost everything will be back open, you know, that there is at least going to be plans in place for most destinations, and that we can start to really plan robust trips going forward. Or, you know, to your point, you pulled it all off even now, and that's possible in a way that it wasn't last year. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I'm the one I'm really hoping for is Japan. So they're still kind of still closed, so for the most part.
Yeah, I'm banking on the fact that they're going to change, but that's also on the list for next year. Nice. big time. So I'm you know, at least they've opened up the tour groups. I feel like that's a good, they made that big first step into that direction, and letting a lot of foreigners in, or at least some foreigners in. So hopefully, you know, Japan will open up, and, you know, it's good for their economies. And yeah, obviously it'd be interesting to talk to somebody who's an expert in just sort of the devastating effects on the tourism industry all around the world in different areas, it's hurt them all so badly.
I mean, Macau lost its crown as the gambling capital of the world because of COVID. You know, so I think Vegas has the crown back, or somewhat, definitely not Macau anymore. But I'm, you know, I eagerly wait for Macau to open up too, because I mean, even though I'm not gambling as much anymore, I still love hanging out in those casinos. And well, I mean, you like it too, right, Sean? I think, you know, even though you're from Vegas,
everybody looks at me, they're like, you don't gamble? And like, no, I'm like, well, I love Macau. Yeah, I love Macau. you know, for me, the casinos are the least of the things I love about Macau. The casinos themselves, because the casinos there are very like serious, and I don't know, I do like them, and stuff, but the properties that they've built there are just incredible. And you know, the first time I visited there was in 2008, right after the Venetian opened on the Cotai Strip.
Oh, amazing.
And so there's like 10 massive mega resorts there now. So in the time from my first visit, I've watched basically an entire kind of Las Vegas Strip grow from nothing. And yeah, and I can't wait to go back there. Plus the hotels there are really cool in that when you have high-ranking hotel status, they tend to treat you like a high roller. So like staying at the Conrad Macau, I always got treated very, very well, or even the Grand Hyatt. They almost treat you like you're a high roller in the casino, which is not something you get in Vegas just for having hotel status generally. So, yeah, I can't. And you talk about the service culture that's alive there as well. So, yeah, hopefully Macau opens back up, and Hong Kong and even mainland China, which I know there's a lot of people have mixed feelings about that. And I do too, but I would love to get back there, to experience the change, because it's been a place I've been going to for 15 years now. And I guess the moral of the story, Han, is that people should go to Asia, you know, whether it's East Asia or Southeast Asia or even Western Asia.
I think so.
I
think a lot of people in the United States are prone to go to Europe, and that's great. And, you know, I need to do more exploring in Europe myself. But after you get to Asia, it's pretty cheap, you know, in a lot of places. So it's just getting over that hurdle. And then if you're willing to be a little bit uncomfortable and maybe be the minority for a change, then, you know, go for it. I think you'd learn a lot and enjoy it and have fun. So anyway, I'm preaching to the choir here, Sean. I mean,
it's always fun to talk about this stuff. And, I really appreciate you joining us and going into in depth with this. And, of course, this is a longer episode on a week I have to edit. So that's always fun. And this just a little,
sorry,
just
Sean.
A little Joe reference there. Joe is, like I said, on his cruise. You can find him at As the Joe Flies all over social media. Han, where can people find you if they're interested in learning more about your travels?
You can just find me on Twitter at Han Chicago.
Perfect. And like I said, I follow him on Twitter on both the business account and also my personal account, because I love all the stuff, especially if you're, you know, you like casinos too, because you have a lot of Vegas stuff, you know, that you talk about. But then you do these crazy trips with products and hotels. Highly recommend following you on Twitter. And I know Mark follows you as well. You can find Mark at Detroit Mark on Twitter. He had a drop off a little early because he's recording back to back shows today. So I'm sure he's thrilled with me. And for everything that we do on this podcast, mtmpodcast.com, or for all of our videos, posts, podcasts, everything that we do, you can find it at milestomemories.com. And we are at milestomemories all over social media. So check us out there. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.